Welcome to CPAC Today in Politics. Coming up, the NDP and the Conservatives call for an emergency meeting on the Mark Norman case.
We need to know whether there was political interference in into the justice system. We've seen that with the SNC-Lavalin case. Canadians want to know what went on there. We need an investigation to find the answers to this.
Andrew Scheer's policy statements open a window to how the parties are starting to frame the next election campaign.
Being a good ally and contributor on the world stage requires more than just talk. Both our allies and adversaries respect strength and confidence. We have seen serious mistakes over and over again from this government, and they are almost always attributable to Mr. Trudeau's poor judgment.
And Elizabeth May says she may hear soon from Jane Philpott and Jody Wilson-Raybould on whether they'll run for the Green Party.
They're friends. No matter what happens, they will always be my friends. I would love them to join us and be Green Party candidates going to the next election. But they have to consider all their options.
It's Monday, May 13th. I'm Mark Sutcliffe. Let's get right to the top political stories this morning. I'm joined by Peter Van Dusen, CPAC's executive producer and the host of Primetime Politics. Good morning, Peter.
Morning, Mark.
I'm interested to see where the Mark Norman storyline goes next as we start a new week on Parliament Hill. The NDP and the Conservatives have called for an emergency meeting. Obviously, they want to keep this alive. But where do you see it going next?
Do you see a pattern here, Mark? when the opposition parties think they've got something on... Yeah. On the government, they've been calling for a number of, we saw it on SNC-Lavalin, two different committees, emergency meetings there, another one in the Mark Norman case. It's a good political tactic because there are certain limits to how you keep a story alive when you're the opposition parties. Of course, question period's one way. But if you want to try and, let's be clear about what they're trying to do here. They're trying to carry this issue on and try to get some answers to some of the questions. And they're trying to do it in such a way that forces the government side to say we're open to having a committee investigation or we're not. And we've seen this with those other committees. As you and our listeners know, on SNC-Lavalin, opposition members, called emergency meetings of committees. And then once they got there, except for one case where the meetings did go ahead, but then subsequently we were shut down by the Liberal majority on those committees. So that's what we're seeing here. We're seeing the opposition parties try to get some answers to these questions. And I think there's still questions to be answered with the Mark Norman case. I think chiefly, how come it took the defense and former Conservative cabinet ministers to come up with evidence that the defense could turn over to the prosecution here and the Crown prosecutors to have them look at it and go, okay, there goes our case. There's not enough to push ahead with these charges, this charge, so we're going to stay it. And secondly, the role of the RCMP. What was the RCMP doing if the defense was going out and questioning former Conservative cabinet ministers to find out that, wait a minute, Mark Norman's behavior, the allegations he's that have been leveled against him, that he's, was leaking information. What exactly was Mark Norman's role in this this contract, this lease contract to get this supply vessel? It sounds like he was leading the project effectively, notwithstanding the role of the defense minister at the time. But it sounds like they told Mark Norman, yeah, make this happen. Let's make it happen quickly. So, what exactly did he do wrong? And there are still some outstanding questions that people want answered.
Yeah. Is this, though, the kind of story that we'll still be talking about in a few weeks, or do you think it's more of an inside the Ottawa bubble kind of story?
Hard to know. I think it's, it was kind of, if you remember in the early days of the SNC-Lavalin story, we were having the same kinds of conversations. Where does the story go? And then, about every second day, some other shoe dropped. There was another story. There was another sort of sortie or salvo from Jody Wilson-Raybould or Jane Philpott. And it sort of kept the story alive. So I'm not sure yet, how much traction this story has and, how many legs this story has for the weeks to come. But there are still enough unanswered questions that we have another week in Parliament here before they take the Victoria Day break. So there's no chance that you won't hear questions on this every single day this week from the Conservatives and I think the New Democrats too. Hard to solve the bit. The short answer to your question is not sure. I think It depends how much more we hear about this story in the next week or 10 days.
Now, we are just over 5 months away until the next federal election in October, and we're starting to see the parties talking a little more about policy. Andrew Scheer, the Conservative leader, outlined a number of different things last week that he said would be a part of his mandate if he is the next Prime Minister of Canada. What do you think about how he's framing things and how we're going to continue to see the major party leaders shape their narratives leading into the federal election campaign?
Yeah, well, it'll certainly only get more intense, Mark. Everybody's going to ratchet up their narratives here. But I look at this and I think this is probably pretty healthy for the democratic process. The Canadians, it seems like, are going to be given some real options when the election comes, not just between Conservatives and Liberals. The NDP's got to put some stuff in the window, and we're going to see more of that, I'm sure, from Jagmeet Singh, and we'll see how much of that catches on. But the increased, I think, interest, the increased attention that the Green Party is getting is going to be an interesting story, and what we watch on the sort of progressive left in this country, notwithstanding the Green Party is not all left. They got a lot of conservative fiscal policies, but I think the sharpening of the narratives is good. This is the time to do it. This is, when Canadians are slowly starting to pay attention, and then of course they all probably pay a little less attention during the summer season and sort of get back at it as the parties get out there. And I think the parties know that. So there's going to be this interesting, with a fixed election date of October 21st, there's going to be this summer period where, not a whole lot of people will probably be paying close attention with holidays and travel and so on. So this is the time between now and, I would say, the end of June, that the parties do want to say that here's what we're all about. And I think you're seeing from Andrew Scheer, it's going to be a different offer to Canadians than on all kinds of key issues, from defense to climate change to international relations. And at least between Conservatives and Liberals, I think Canadians will be given a choice. And I think that's always healthy.
You mentioned the Green Party, which has been rising in the opinion polls and has had some good news provincially and federally in the last month. And Green Party leader Elizabeth May has said recently that she expects to hear soon from Jane Philpott and Jody Wilson-Raybould on whether they would consider running for the Green Party in the next federal election. So we might see something on that in the next week or two. How big a game changer do you think that would be for the Greens?
Yeah, I think a big game changer. Will we see it that quickly? Maybe. I think it might be a little broader timeline. I think we're into, memory serves me correct, sort of mid-June before a lot of these parties, the nomination process closes off. So if they're going to be candidates for the Green Party, I would say realistically, yeah, the outside limit's the next month and perhaps sooner than that. It could be a big game changer. I mean, both of those women are widely respected for the positions they took, on the SNC-Lavalin affair. And, I suppose if you look at it, over the recent history of the Green Party, one of the things they have suffered from is, people give them a look in past elections, but they've rarely had sort of big name candidates. And so if they were able to pull a couple of big name candidates, who knows where that would lead, Mark? Does it lead to more big name candidates that say, oh, Wilson-Raybould and Philpott are going to the Green Party, and look what they've left behind, given the conflict they had with their own party. They've taken time to look at what's on offer from the Greens. If it's good enough for them, maybe it's good enough for me. I'm not sure how many Canadians will feel that way, but just having two high profile candidates cross over, I think would be a big, big plus for the Greens. And that's let's be clear. I'm not sure how many people are convinced that's going to happen. These two women may in fact for now walk away from politics, but if they're staying, they might find a natural home with the Greens if they decide they want to stay and do something other than run again as independents.
Yeah. All right. And finally, the Senate's Internal Economy Committee is looking into an expenditure by Donna Dasko, an independent senator, who commissioned a poll that cost $15,000 to get Canadians' opinions on the changes that were made by the current government to the Senate. And conservative members of the committee are saying this was not a good expenditure of Canadian.
Yeah, it shouldn't have been approved. They say it's a partisan expense. Let's be clear, Donna Dasko is a former professional pollster when she was at Enveronics, so she knows polling. I'm not sure. I looked at the poll questions, you know, asking Canadians, do you want the current system of appointing senators to continue, or do you want to go back to the old way of appointing senators? And, you know, the survey showed most Canadians want to stay with the current system. They don't want to go back. I think there was also a question in there that showed that there's still just under 50% of Canadians, you know, don't have a good feeling about the Senate, don't have high regard for the Senate, so it still suffers from an image problem. But, you know, I suppose if you look at this on the surface, this is a project that she wanted to do as a senator. There's been polling done in the Senate before, as she pointed out. She ran it by the people in the Senate who are responsible for enforcing the rules. They said it was okay, so now it seems like a political issue. You don't like the answers, you don't like the poll.
All right. Good to have your thoughts on all these topics, Peter. Thank you very much for joining us today.
All right, Mark, we'll talk again.
That's CPAC's Peter Van Dusen. Now, here's what political columnists and commentators are writing about today. In the Toronto Star, Jamie Watt calls the Mark Norman case another blow to Canada's justice system. Watt writes, "This whole business raises questions as to what is going wrong with the administration of justice in this country. Time and again, we have seen high-profile prosecutions collapse or defendants decisively acquitted. Resources are wasted and untold harm inflicted on those who are accused. After so many false starts, the question must be asked, at what point does the excuse of a series of unrelated occurrences stop and a troublesome pattern begin?" In an editorial, the Hamilton Spectator argues, voters need to hear more about Andrew Scheer's foreign policy objectives. The Spectator writes, "Up with America, down with China, move the embassy in Israel." All of these were worthy talking points in the address Scheer made to a business audience in Montreal. But he still sounded like an opposition leader more than a statesman. While Canadians can welcome Scheer's frankness and resolve, they deserve to know how he'd turn his partially drawn blueprints into an international affairs machine that would actually run. In Maclean's, Philippe J. Fournier asks what the next federal election would have looked like if electoral reform had happened. Fournier writes, "Should Canada ever implement some sort of proportional representation, voting intentions would dramatically be altered in this country. After recent referendum losses in BC and PEI, will proponents bring electoral reform back in the national discussion next fall? With conservatives projected on the edge of a majority with a little more than a third of the vote, we should expect center and left of center parties to go full steam on this issue. Except for the Liberals, of course." Now, here's what's coming up on Canada's political agenda. The Prime Minister will attend the welcoming ceremony and meet with the President of Croatia as she begins her state visit to Canada. He will also attend the opening of the new Centre for Geography and Exploration in Ottawa, followed by a state dinner hosted by the Governor General. Employment Minister Patty Hajdu will make an announcement in Ottawa. Infrastructure Minister François-Philippe Champagne will attend an infrastructure event in Bois des Filions, Quebec. Minister of Tourism Melanie Joly will be in Victoria, BC, to speak about the upcoming federal tourism strategy. And Agriculture Minister Marie-Claude Bibeau will take part in a teleconference to talk about the G20 Agriculture Ministers meeting in Japan. And that's CPAC Today in Politics for Monday, May the 13th. Tune in to Primetime Politics tonight on CPAC for coverage of all the day's events. Our podcast returns tomorrow morning. Have a great day.